Hello, 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 ladies and germs. This is the David Martinez podcast coming at you on Sunday, April the 20th. Happy Easter to everyone. So today, this particular podcast, I did something that I normally don't do, and I actually try not to do on most other occasions. I actually re-recorded it. So yesterday, the 19th, is when I first tried to record this podcast with the subject I was going to record. And with most of my podcasts, I try to stay away from any kind of topic that's, you know, even a little controversial or could rub other people even a little the wrong way. I try to keep it light. I try to keep it funny. I try to keep just, you know, just sort of general goofy stories or, you know, what have you. But this particular time, there was a couple of subjects where, you know, it might bother somebody or might, you know, just rub somebody the wrong way. And so so I record it, and I had like 2 hours in which I was going to have to try to prepare this whole thing and then record it and then get it done. So I'm already in a little bit of a rush. On top of that, I didn't really realize until I stopped recording that I was getting a little hungry. And when I'm hungry, I tend to get a little cranky. So by the end of it, I'm listening back to it and I'm realizing, you know, on top of missing a couple of really key points that I wanted to sort of touch on, I also kind of came off a lot more sort of annoyed and antagonistic than I normally do in these sort of podcasts. And so I thought, you know what, I got to get rid of this. I can't post something in good conscience that doesn't really accurately represent what I think about a particular subject, especially if it's something that I'm trying to take a little seriously. So I decided, okay, let's just re-record it. You know, normally I try to make this podcast as sort of candid and informal as possible. I don't want it to sound like a rehearsed speech. I want it to sound like a casual conversation that I'm just having with some topics that I've kind of thought about in my mind. But this time I really had to do a retake. Not that you would have known otherwise, but, you know, it's just one of those things. This is my process. This is this whole podcast journey that I'm on. And for those of you who are on it with me, this is where we are. This is what it is. I will make a small note about how that I think that's worth mentioning, because I think a lot of other people who are in a similar kind of position, albeit a lot more well-known and a lot more famous and a lot better at it than I am, there is something about being in a position like this where you're just kind of expected to talk, especially if you're expected to talk and entertain and give your opinions. There's a certain, it's easy sometimes to say more than you really mean on a subject, to be a bit more emphatic about something, to add a little more emphasis and a little more oomph and a little more emotion about something than you really honestly feel, largely for effect. I feel like a lot of comedians get in trouble for this. They'll make some, you know, some really callous remark, or they make some, you know, some remark that's either, you know, racist or sexist or insensitive to this or that other thing, and they get in trouble, and, you know, and people just, you know, look at them like, oh my gosh, you're monsters. How could you have said that thing? But, you know, their whole life and their whole vocation is not just being, you know, bluntly and plainly and blandly honest, but like saying things in such a way that it's entertaining. And, you know, sometimes you're going to step on some toes. So, I don't know. It's just sort of one of those things. It kind of came across. I was watching Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars getting coffee, and he's on there with Michael Richards, and they touched a little bit on his whole little incident a few years back where he said some really rather awful and racist things. And Jerry Seinfeld stood by him at the time, saying like, no, that's not really reflective of what he is and what he thinks. But again, like, he's in that position. He's upset. He kind of lost control, and his whole vocation is geared toward saying things that, you know, that step on toes and that shock and have effect like that. And this time he said it a lot more than he should have. So anyhow, that's pretty much that. All right, so Easter. Happy Easter, everybody. That's today. Today is that day. A wonderful holiday, a very significant holiday for me, being a Christian as well. I love holidays, especially ones that have, you know, a certain tradition behind them. I like holidays in which people get together and they, you know, enjoy each other's company and they eat and there's, you know, some sort of ritual or formality about it. I really like and enjoy those kinds of things. Last weekend, was really nice. My wife and I were in Santa Barbara, and we went to the, you know, we were away from our home church for the weekend. So we thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool if the Santa Barbara Mission had a mass that we could just sort of attend? And the Santa Barbara Mission is like a lot of these missions here in California, where they were formed a long time ago. Like this one here, I think, was formed in like 1781, I think, or something along those lines. So it's interesting for me to sort of go to a place that is, you know, America was barely a country at the time. And in some people's eyes, you know, not even really a country just yet. So it was really cool to sort of be a part of that history, a history that that was sort of running in parallel to all these other things that were happening on the other side of the country at the time, of our really rather large country at the time, and to see this whole other sort of this sort of culture that was developing on this side of the country, you know, during that time. Going to a Catholic mass is interesting. We're not Catholic personally. We're more, I guess, would be considered Protestant. And so the first feeling is that of being a little bit of a fish out of water. For those of you who've been in a similar position, you know, there's a lot of gestures and phrases that you repeat this and they say this and you say that. And then at this point you kneel, at this point you say this. And at this point you do this other gesture or phrase or song or what have you. And so there's a lot of that kind of formality behind it. And that a lot of that, which we're not familiar with. So it was kind of weird, for us, to kind of be sort of thrown into that on one hand. But on the other hand, a lot of it was really, really nice, because a lot of these Catholic traditions date back to the very, very early Christian church. And it was really wonderful to kind of feel that sense of connection and context to a much older tradition than what we're normally accustomed to in modern churches. You know, every song, every phrase, every gesture is just steeped in meaning and old Christian tradition. And it was nice to kind of feel a sort of connection and a context to that. That was really nice. But then coming home, you know, inevitably on the internet, you have all of the, I guess, for lack of a cleverer term, the holiday haters, I'm going to call them. Every holiday sort of has them. I think in one or two podcasts ago, I mentioned the Valentine's Day haters and why they sort of do that. Thanksgiving is another one people like to sort of hate on, you know, for, you know, various and obvious reasons. And then Christmas and Easter, usually the every year, the, you know, you'll have a whole group of people who bring out the very obvious and accessible fact of that, you know, a lot of the symbols which are modernly used in Christmas and in Easter, like Christmas with presents and a tree, and Easter with, you know, eggs and bunnies and birds and those sort of things, you know, have sort of pagan origins. Now, I'm not going to get into the sort of pedantic use of historical facts that a lot of this stuff sort of betrays. What I would like to mention is two reasons why I feel like that just kind of annoys me a little bit. One is, and it's this annoying little, trick of popular sociology, what sociology has had on the general public, which is that if I don't like or agree with something, the easiest thing I can do to kind of repute it or to sort of demean it is to show how, you know, some way in which it can be very easily culturally or historically contextualized. And so in the case of the Easter haters, it's like, well, you know, these sort of things that date back to pagan traditions of this. So if you really want to, you know, Easter is really the name Ishtar, which dates back to this pagan goddess of fertility and da 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 da, which is okay. You know, it sort of begs the question, like, so what's your point? What's, you know, what are you really trying to get at there? And I feel like with most of these people, what they're really trying to get at is this thing that you believe in, this thing that's so important to you, can be localized in a very easy and explainable sort of way. And quite frankly, that's the truth with any kind of moral or metaphysical thing that you think about or you believe in. It's really no answer to me to sort of kind of point that out to some degree, because every you know, tyrant or awful person in, you know, that's operating and hurting and harming people in some other country can very easily tell us here in the West that your beliefs about personal freedom and the equality of all peoples and the and how women should be treated can very easily be culturally and historically contextualized within your Western beliefs, and we don't happen to have them, so screw off. So to me, it's no answer to kind of like, you know, show how these kinds of things can, you know, have some historical or cultural background. Without getting too into it, because it's this by itself is such a huge, huge and complex topic, I will say that in my, as I see it, these kind of moral and metaphysical truths, what needs to be determined is whether these are the kinds of things that were merely invented and are of human conventions, or these are the kinds of things that were discovered. Because you can, you know, from a purely materialistic standpoint, you can make any moral idea a very local thing that is purely subjective. But some morality has to be of the kind that is discovered, not merely invented. Otherwise, you have no right to tell anybody that what they're doing is wrong. So anyhow, that's problem. Problem number one with that. And then problem number two is that, to be honest, most people really don't care about, you know, the pagan traditions that these things came from. Most people really don't. Most people, and I will say most because, some do try to have a connection with that, I guess. But most people just dislike Western civilization and or Christian civilization so much that any excuse to kind of bash it or to kind of, you know, point out how it's sort of weird or arbitrary or, you know, very localized within a particular society is good enough for them. You know, so they take some, you know, they take some very pedantic piece of, you know, Christian history or history about the matter, and they make a meme about it, and they try to tell everyone, like, see, this whole thing that you believe is absurd. This older thing was there before, and this is where you got this from. So, you know, and to me, that doesn't mean anything, because quite frankly, you don't really throw any importance on that either. You just don't like this other thing so much. So, anyhow, I'm not even sure where I want to go with that whole phrase, but it's just, I feel like people really need to think about their reactions and their intentions on these sort of things before they just start spitting things out all the time, especially with the internet, because the internet just makes it that much easier to do it. It also makes it a lot less likely that you're going to think about what you have to say before you just sort of, you know, spit it out and say it on the internet. So that's my whole thing with that. So the next thing is, I know earlier this month or within the last, some time between now and the last podcast anyway, they had that whole ban Bossy campaign that I guess Beyonce was trying to sort of put out there. This is one of those sort of funny things. Funny because it is, to me, endemic of, is endemic the right word? I don't know. It's part of a kind of a sort of dumb tendency that very modern or much younger feminist types are trying to adopt now, are sort of adopting nowadays without really thinking about it. And I say dumb not because the people who say this sort of thing sometimes are dumb, but dumb in that there's not a lot of thought and rationale that's put into it before they sort of say that. So, you know, they'll say things like, well-behaved women rarely make history, or when a girl is told that she's bossy, I just want to tell her that she has good leadership skills. And the problem I have with that is that I feel like earlier feminists at least had a particular shape that they were sort of aiming for, like a particular solid idea of what their ideal woman was supposed to be. And whatever that was, you know, not that I necessarily agreed with all of it, but at least, you know, it was something solid. It was something you could, you know, sort of really identify with. Where I feel like now more and more it's become this big shapeless thing. And the only thing they feel confident in telling women to do is to simply not let anyone else tell you what to do. Don't let anyone else tell you what to do or who to be, especially if it's a man. And so, again, you say something like, well-behaved women and rarely make history. Well, to me, that's just as applicable to somebody like Maya Angelou as it is to serial killer Eileen Wuornos. You know, you say something like, If a young girl is being bossy, I just want to tell her she has good leadership skills. Well, to me, that's just as applicable to, like, Hillary Clinton as it would be to, like, these really mean, you know, just horrible people, you know, sort of diva-like people you see, like, on The Wives of Orange County or these horrible celebrity stories of just terribly mean, demanding women. And, you know, these phrases are just as applicable in both cases. So to me, it just reflects that just there's less and less thought being put into this, and it's more and more just don't let anyone tell you what to do, and that's the only thing we feel comfortable in telling them and saying. And the term itself, like, you know, bossy seems to equal good leadership skills, also I think is just sort of dumb, because that whole phrase can, and at least as far as I can tell, as far as I can kind of think in my own, you know, rather simple, narrow sort of way, can only mean one of three things. Either A, the word bossy itself has no meaning. B, bossy is a term that's only used in reference to women. Or C, women never exude that tendency, which is typically called bossy. That's, you know, that's just not something that happens in that particular gender. So the first thing, which is that, you know, women, you know, bossy has no meaning, I think is not true. Because when somebody says bossy, somebody's being bossy, we all know what that means. We all have a picture that's a pretty similar, solid picture of what that probably means. Even if you haven't really intellectualized a sort of Webster-ish kind of definition of what that means, we all kind of know it when somebody says it. And what it means, is best as I can kind of define it, is somebody who is assuming a certain amount of control or authority that is out of sync, or that is, you know, in excess of or not in keeping with their particular position with regards to you. So, you know, when a coworker, for example, you know, a coworker who's a peer starts to order you around and tell you that you need to do this and you need to do that, they're probably being what's, you know, bossy. If a young child starts ordering other children around or telling their parents what to do, that's bossy. So it is something, and we know what it is when we hear that word. The other thing, which is that, you know, the term bossy is only used in reference to women. I mean, I'll concede that it's probably used more often incorrectly toward women. You know, I will concede that there is probably a lot of people who are just not fond of women, you know, telling them what to do. And so they might say these sort of things, but, you know, women can be bossy. Women can assume authority that is in a way that's just completely out of sync with, you know, their position, and do it in such a way that is not being a good leader, but that's just being sort of mean, just like men can. You know, the word bossy may not always be used in reference to men, but when men exhibit this behavior, there are other words that we use. We may say that they're an a-hole, they're a jerk, they're a blowhard, they're just somebody I don't like working with, you know, period. Just like the B word, so to speak, may have different meanings when it's used in reference to a woman versus when it's referenced, you know, used in reference to a man. You know, there are ways in which we have to describe men who act this way. And even if we don't know who's used the word bossy, it is something that we do use on both, you know, with both sexes. And then finally, the third thing which it could possibly mean, which is that women are never bossy, it's just, you know, something that doesn't exist in their gender, is obviously not true, and is obviously a very arrogant and silly thing to say. So to me, again, that whole phrase, which is equating bossiness with good leadership, it doesn't hold any weight. It can't be true as it is stated, as it is simply laid out and as it is simply stated. And then the other thing, which kind of, you know, which is kind of silly about that, is that being, you know, leadership and leadership skills and being a good leader entails a lot more than simply just somebody who gives out orders. In fact, only bad leaders, equate leadership with, you know, just sort of giving out orders, you know, being somebody who sort of sees a lot of small businesses like myself. I'm IT consultant, so I deal with a lot of people in a lot of leadership positions. I feel like I see a lot of different types of leaders, and there are some who just think that ordering people around and telling them what to do is all that's really entailed in being a good leader. And those are the types of people who usually a lot of people don't like to be around. But then there are other types who are much more inspiring, who have a much more complex understanding of what it means to be a leader. I couldn't really expound on this very much. There are entire books and people who are much more qualified than I am to really expound on what it does mean to be a good leader. But what I can say is that it entails a lot more than simply ordering people around and telling people what to do. To be perfectly frank, it doesn't surprise me that, sort of rich and famous diva types like Beyonce and some of these other ones who have sort of gotten behind this campaign sort of think that, because there is a tendency that I've noticed in certain types of rich people where they've gotten a bit of money, they've gotten a little bit of the power, and maybe in some cases the fame that goes along with it. And so there's an inflated sense of their authority, because, you know, when Beyonce wants something done, she just says it and it gets done because she's Beyonce. If it didn't get done, you know, her and people like her know that all they have to do is yell a little louder, stamp their feet a little harder, and it will get done. And it's that, I think, which kind of develops in their mind this very poor idea of what it means to be a good leader. If these people had no money and no power any longer, I'd like to see what kind of leadership skills they really can really sort of embody at that point. So, you know, from the standpoint of what bossy means and from the standpoint of what leadership means, I think that the phrase leader, you know, bossy equals leadership, you know, yada yada yada, is just ridiculous. And I think that if you really want to make women who are good leaders, you should stop imposing that idea on them, period. So anyhow, that was that. So lastly, the last thing I kind of want to touch on is something of a more personal nature. My wife and I are moving, not moving far. Currently, as most of you know, we live in the city of Whittier, California, but we have just bought a house in the city of Pomona, California, in the Pomona Heights, historical district of Pomona. So it's an interesting and a wild sort of ride for us. And there were kind of a lot of impressions and a lot of things that sort of strike me as this is happening. The first thing which sort of struck me as kind of weird is that I've lived in Whittier a long time. I feel like this is maybe a more of a common thing, you know, in other parts of this country. But in California, especially Southern California, where you've got a ton of transplants, it's weird maybe to have just spent most of your adult life in one single sort of city. Because at least people are always impressing on me what a weird thing that is anyway. But when I was very, very young, my parents moved from living with my grandmother in Huntington Park, I think it was. I think maybe they spent some time with my uncle as well. But like right around when I was 5 or 6, they moved to Whittier. And since then I've lived in 1, 2, 3, 4 different houses there with my parents, and my wife and I ended up moving to Whittier. We didn't really intend to, but it sort of ended up working out that was the best place for us at the time. So what sort of struck me was that for the first time in as long as I can ever remember, I'm not going to be familiar with the city that I live in. I'm not going to know where the shopping centers are and where the restaurants are and where the parks are and where all the municipal services are and the libraries and how to get home from any particular direction. You know, I may have to Google how to get home if I'm in some neighboring city and coming from a direction I haven't come from before, you know? And that's kind of odd for me to sort of think about, because it's something that I've largely taken for granted, because I've always lived in Whittier. And, you know, all of my formative years, with the exception of like my infant ones, have been spent in Whittier. So that's kind of odd for me. The other thing which sort of strikes me is that home buying, I feel like, is one of those sort of major milestones in life that you have when you're relatively sort of young. And there's kind of a large series of them that happen starting when you're about 18. Starting when you're about 18 is when the college becomes a thing. And that's a big step in life and a big sort of, milestone in, you know, sort of adulthood. And then somewhere along the way, and not in any particular order, and not for everybody, of course, but there's usually like marriage and or having a kid And then, you know, at some point later on is sort of having a house. And with each one of these, you know, sort of stages in life, there's, you know, a lot of sort of excitement and newness and like, oh my gosh, there are a lot of sort of very quote unquote helpful people who try to tell you what they should do and what they did and how you should do this and why you're doing that and so on and so forth. And then there are a lot of genuinely helpful people who you're really thankful to have in your life at those particular times because, you know, they've gone through before and they know what they're doing. So it's sort of fun. Home buying, I think, is really great. I think I'm going to be, I feel like it's a lot less of the negative parts of, you know, these sort of milestones than like, say, having kids. Because I feel like having kids, every person that I see that has them, they go through those sort of stages of, you know, they're doing it for the first time and everybody around them is always trying to impress on them what they should be doing and how they should be doing it. And so it's, you know, like, you should don't hold your kid too much because you want its independence. And then, oh my gosh, you monster, why don't you hold your kid more? They need to bond with you. And, you know, things like, you know, let your kid cry it out. You can't just be coddling them all the time. You monster, that kid is crying. They need you. This is a terrible barbaric method. And feed your kid this all the time. Like, you monster, don't feed them that. It's terrible for them. And all these sort of competing views and, you know, plans and, especially very sort of detail-oriented and competent people kind of take that stance of like, nobody really knows how to do this like I do because I did the research, I read the right books, and I compared all the data, and I'm, you know, you should listen to me, what I have to say. And then so they get, you know, people, they get annoyed by all this, and then as soon as they've had their kid and they've, you know, sort of done this for a little bit, and somebody else is having their kid for the first time, they kind of change positions and become those people. But fortunately for the home buying process, there's a lot less of that and a lot more of people really just being helpful. Like, hey, you should look out for this and can we help you with that? And I've gotten a lot of people who have volunteered to help us out with various home projects and various other sort of undertakings that are involved with the house, especially an older house like the one we're going to be getting. And it's just been really nice to kind of see how many people sort of genuinely love and care about us. So that's also another part of this whole thing. Another sort of funny part is, for me, I've never considered myself the kind of person who takes a sort of pride or notice, you know, with something like an area code or, you know, where somebody's address happens to be. You know, I've always felt, I guess in some way, I always thought maybe I was kind of above that sort of behavior, but I realize now that I'm not as much as I thought I was, because every single time I say, you know, for those of you who live in the Southern California area, you kind of know what I'm talking about, because when I say Pomona, most people think like, oh yeah, that's that whole blight in the LA County, you know, sandwiched in between relatively nice cities like Claremont and Laverne and, you know, sort of San Dimas and these sort of places. It's this whole sort of gang-filled kind of blight right in the middle of all that, that most people generally don't want to live in if they don't have to. And so knowing that, whenever I say, oh, we're moving to Pomona, I always feel like I have to immediately qualify it with, but we're moving to the Lincoln Heights district. It's a Heights. It's elevated. It's an elevated part of this otherwise dank city. You don't understand. Like, I have to make sure they understand. Like, I'm not living in Pomona. I'm living in the Lincoln Heights historical district of Pomona. And it's funny because I'm like, I'm embarrassed. I am embarrassed. And I'm embarrassed that I'm embarrassed by this. I'm embarrassed that I'm that kind of person who just can't just say like, yeah, I live in Pomona. I'm going to be living in Pomona. Yeah, it's a cool area. I'm happy with it. And the area is nice. If you guys, I'm sure all of you know me personally. If you ever want to visit, it's these really nice sort of old, early sort of 20th century homes. Our house was built in 1919. All the neighbors they keep up their houses. Most of the neighbors, the vast majority of them, keep up their houses well, and they've been nicely restored. And it's a beautiful sort of neighborhood. There's sort of a park that you can walk to. The downtown Pomona area is within easy riding distance, and it's fun. I mean, the house is an old house, so there's a lot of little old housey kind of problems, but we're okay with that because it has the kind of aesthetic that we want. Well, all that to say, it's funny for me to realize that like I'm not above that kind of sort of, you know, silly and sort of vain behavior when it comes to houses. But, you know, it is what it is, and it's going to be a ride. And I guess unless I decide to do something else in the very near future, my next podcast is going to be broadcast from there. And I'm excited about that because unlike my current home, slash apartment, I have some space that I can sort of call mine for, you know, for these sort of projects. So I don't have to wait until, you know, Anna's not going to be making any noise for me to do one of these things. I can just tuck away to my little office, record a podcast, and sort of go. And then hopefully, maybe I'll be able to do these things with a greater degree of frequency, if not a better quality of content. Anywho, I guess it's about that time. Yeah, it's close enough. So thank you guys for listening. Did I do the podcast password? I don't think I did. I need to get better at that. All right, podcast password time, last thing. So as many of you know, the podcast password is something that I use. So if you want to communicate to me that you actually listen to the podcast and that you're a fan of the David Martinez podcast, and I do like to know because it is nice for me to know that some people actually care and think that this is at least a little entertaining. Send me the podcast password in a Facebook post or a little message somehow. That way I know, like, oh, cool, you actually listened. That was, you know, really nice of you. And then anybody who managed to work into a sentence in a clever sort of way, I'm happy to sort of mention in the podcast. So last podcast, only one person actually gave me the password, and that was a Mr. Jonathan Cleed. So thank you very much for that, Mr. Jonathan Cleed. Last episode's password was Marshmallow Ligament. This episode's password is Corkscrew. And like many passwords, it's largely because it just happened to be an object that I saw just before I thought of it. And so that's what it is. So Corkscrew is the password. If you want to go ahead and use it in a sentence or just let me know, that would be wonderful. Well, thank you guys so much. Have a wonderful, happy, and safe Easter. And I will see you all in Pomona next time. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.